This is The 10th Voice, Kansas City's gay and lesbian radio magazine. The 10th Voice, because you refuse to be silent.
Hello, this is Elizabeth Anderson. I'm your host for today on the Santa Moran Radio Book Club every second Saturday of the month. And we have a very exciting show today. We're going to talk about two different books, and we have the two authors with us today. The first book is Compass Rose by Anna Burke, and the second book is 2 Degrees with Bev Prescott. Anna and Bev will both be on the show. I want to mention here that I've read both books multiple times, and full disclosure, these are both published by Bywater Books, and I am one of the editors for Bywater Books. And I also have a panelist who has been on before, Michelle Pond. Welcome, Michelle.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Thanks for having me back.
Let's see who we've got on the air. Bev, are you there?
I am.
Hi, Bev.
Hi, Bev.
Anna?
I'm here. Thank you for having me.
Wonderful. Wanted to start out by talking about your background and why you're both so interested in climate change. Bev, let's start with you.
So my day job is I practice environmental law. I have a bachelor's degree in environmental science, a master's in microbiology, and now I practice environmental law. So the environment is something that I'm particularly interested in, and I think that climate change is the absolute most important environmental issue that we're grappling with today.
I believe you've been to Antarctica, right?
Yes. Yes, I've been to Antarctica and also up to the Arctic, and they were incredibly powerful and moving trips for me. And in fact, I would, as I've said before, my trip to Antarctica was really the catalyst for me wanting to write 2 Degrees.
Anna, what about you? I believe you wrote this novel when you were in the West Indies. Why are you interested in climate change?
Well, I mean, I'm a bit of an armchair ecologist, I guess. I don't have any credentials. But I've done quite a bit of work in sustainable agriculture. I know I've always been outdoorsy. I'm 29. So I think for me, part of the big, not appeal, but the impetus for it is that, you know, this is my generation. This is going to be my generation's fight. I mean, it should be all of our fight, but it's definitely going to impact me and my children directly. And I can't not write about that, I guess. And then when I was writing Compass Rose, I was in the West Indies at the time, and just, I mean, I'm sure Bev can relate too, but seeing those very real impacts of climate change up close really makes it personal.
That makes perfect sense. I want to throw this to Michelle because she's a photographer who does a lot of nature photography.
That's true. And since I started doing that, obviously I try to observe, and I do take a lot of photographs of my own garden. And so I'm able to go out every day and just look for different things to photograph. But I also see kind of the life cycles of the plants and what's happening to them and how things have differed. For example, this year, mine were a little bit later blooming. I planted later because of all the rain and the conditions that we had at the time that I usually would have planted. So even just little things like that are, you know, affecting me personally.
And Bev, you're in New England, and I believe you are as well, Anna. You've probably noticed the leaf color is later than it used to be. I remember in the 60s when I lived in Western Massachusetts, it was always the first weekend in October. Is that still true, Bev?
Yeah, it's definitely changing, not only the time when the leaves change in the fall, but more directly related to my experience this summer is that, so in Maine, so I'm a beekeeper, and in Maine, typically the time of year where when you have to pay attention to whether your bees are going to swarm is more early to mid-June, and what I'm finding with the behavior of my bees is that their behavior is changing just like the leaves are changing. So I've got to pay attention to them maybe swarming earlier, or, you know, things like when the nectar starts to flow. So the nectar, you know, it's starting to flow a little bit earlier. So things got started earlier for my bees this spring. So yeah, things are definitely changing.
And Anna, have you noticed that as well? Maybe not with bees, but in general?
Yeah, I would say in general. And again, you know, I'm pretty young, so most of the overtime change has mostly come from listening to other people, and especially when I was farming, just, you know, seeing how the farmers have had to adjust their crop schedule. And especially when I was in upstate New York, which is where I grew up, we've had a couple of years where there just weren't any apples because of the really early spring thaws, and then, of course, it freezes again.
You mentioned that you're young. I would like to point out here that you are considerably younger than my two sons. Let me ask you, each of you, and I'll start with you, Anna, this time. What inspired you to write Compass Rose?
So, certainly science played a huge role in it, but I think that moment of inspiration, I was sitting on a beach on St. Kitts, a friend, and there may or may not have been some Caribbean rum involved. And I was talking to him about how I really wanted to write a story about sort of self-sustaining ships that just sailed the ocean. And he was like, well, that's kind of boring. You obviously need to have a pirate queen and some high seas romance. And so I laughed and said, I don't know about that. And then about 24 hours later, Miranda walked into my head. So that's how that came about.
Beth, what about you?
Yeah, so again, a subject that I've been interested in for a long time, but our trip to Antarctica, probably a really important moment for me was we had the benefit of being able to sit and observe a particular chinstrap penguin colony. And so we're watching these penguins, and I noticed this one particular penguin. It was filthy. It was absolutely filthy. And what it was trying to do was build its nest. But the problem for this penguin is that because there had been so much melting, that instead of trying to build a nest on the snow with rocks, the penguin was battling with these really muddy conditions. And this particular penguin, because it wasn't an older, more aggressive penguin, it was forced to the outskirts of the colony where it was really wet, not just muddy, but wet. And so this little penguin just, it would not give up. It kept going and trying to find rocks, and it just wouldn't give up trying to build a nest, an almost impossible place. And so one of the ornithologists that we were on the trip with was describing for us that because the conditions are changing so much in places in Antarctica where the penguins colonize, that it's changing their behavior and it's making it much more difficult for them to survive. And so I felt compelled to tell this story and do the research necessary to try to describe what things might look like for not just the penguins, but all of humanity if we don't do something about this problem. And I'm sure Anna can probably relate to this after having done all the research that she did for Compass Rose. And that is, it's really pretty frightening when you dig into the research and you look at where we could be headed. And as terrible as it could possibly be, I think we have no choice but to look at it, to confront it, and try to do something about it as best we can.
You probably saw the headlines that there was a colony of, I believe, emperor penguins, tens of thousands of them wiped out.
Yeah.
It's very frightening. Let's talk a little about whether these two books are dystopian fiction. And I want to talk to each of you, and then I want to get Michelle's opinion. I've seen them listed as science fiction. I've seen them listed as climate fiction. And I've also seen them listed in dystopian fiction. Bev, let's start with you.
I think it's definitely fair to categorize 2 Degrees as dystopian because it takes place in a pretty dark future. But having said that, I think I would characterize it as being a lot of different things. So it's also a story that's very character driven. It's about people. And I didn't want to just tell a frightening story. I wanted to tell a story with characters that would inspire us to try to be better and do things that will help the situation versus just be afraid and stick our heads in the sand because it's just too scary.
Anna, what about you? Do you consider yours dystopian?
Well, I used to. I think now I just call it current events, right? I don't know. I wanted it to ultimately be a hopeful and exciting book, you know, full of adventure. But the the backdrop is dependent on climate change continuing unchecked the way that it is now. And then that definitely, I mean, I don't think you could look at that future without viewing it as dystopian. That being said, I mean, I'm happy however people want to categorize it as long as it's on a shelf.
And Michelle, is science fiction one of your preferred genres? Is it now? What is your thought?
You just took my line. I was going to say, well, it didn't used to be until I read these two books. Yeah, I think I'm more open. Of course, you know, I had heard good things about the books, you know, seen good reviews and things like that. And I do have the interest in climate change. So when it was noted as climate fiction, that kind of drew me in a little bit more. But, you know, I think the most important thing is they're just both such wonderful stories, and the writing is so good that, I mean, I'd read a book like that any day.
I'm discovering, I thought I didn't care for science fiction much or fantasy, but somehow this week, probably in preparation for this show, I've been watching Terry Pratchett, Neil Gaiman's Good Omens, and then I watched Hogfather, that's Terry Pratchett, and I'm reading Jane Fletcher's Shoestone, so all of a sudden I'm on a science fiction kick, which I never could have dreamed, and I think that's inspired by both of you.
Well, I did think about this a little bit, that we might discuss it. And I realized that, you know, when I was growing up and first starting to read, science fiction really kind of meant like space. And then all of a sudden those things weren't fiction anymore, you know, because we were, you know, I grew up kind of at the edge of the space age coming in. And so I think now with books like this that handle major issues, that the genres become more open to a lot of different topics, it's more likely I'll find things I'm interested in.
That makes sense to me. I want to talk a little bit about the setting. Bev, your book is set in 2092, which is, what, 70-plus years from now. It seems far off, but I've been reading articles that humans could be in real trouble in 30 years. So actually, yours is extremely believable. How did you come up with a setting for your novel? It's really a pretty frightening landscape.
I did a lot of research while I was writing this book, read a lot of books about climate change. What I did was I summarized kind of the big picture forecasts for how North America could potentially change based on what climate change is now doing to us and is going to continue to do to us. And so what I did was I wanted to take my character on a journey across North America to all these different places that could be dramatically changed. And so that's how I built my setting. And I started the story in Maine and Boston because I spend all of my time in Maine and Boston. And so that was a good starting point for me. But the story goes from Boston to Maine to Chicago to San Francisco. My character spends some time over at El Capitan, and then she heads up into New Brunswick and then down to South Carolina and then ultimately on the ocean. And so the purpose of my setting was to take readers on a journey across a changed landscape based on climate change.
The descriptions of the winds, the storms, the desert, it's just, I saw one review that mentioned there were harrowing passages, and I think that's fair. Ultimately, your novel is hopeful, but this journey, oh my gosh, it is a thrill ride.
One book that I would recommend to anyone who's interested in getting a easy to read but very science-based description, big picture of climate change is called Climate, What Everyone Needs to Know by Joseph Rahm. And so it's really pretty terrifying when you, again, get into the science of how things could change in terms of coastlines being inundated with floodwaters and these crazy superstorms. And now we've got these heat waves, like the heat wave that's happening right now in the Midwest and in France. I mean, 100 degrees in France in June is just crazy. I wanted to tell a story about what the scientists are predicting for us. And it is pretty frightening. And so I hope people aren't scared off by the frighteningness of that because of the hope that I tried to interweave into it, and the story about people and good people and trying to do the best that we can. But it, for me, the purpose of this book was to not only educate myself, but to take readers on a journey of what I learned in my research. And so that's why it was frightening, because what's being predicted is frightening.
It's an exciting, exciting journey. Anna, let's talk about yours. Your novel, Compass Rose, is set in 2513. Yours is a water-based landscape. Do you want to talk about why you chose a watery novel?
There were a couple different reasons. One was, you know, I definitely want to come back to sort of this time period and explore other parts of the world in the future in other books. But I was thinking about what, you know, what all these coastal populations are going to do. You know, where are people going to go? Especially, you know, as I love that novel, highly recommend it. You know, we're being reduced into these, you know, less and less habitable zones. And of course, human population continues to rise. And so certainly there's going to be a crisis of space. And I was just thinking, okay, the ocean certainly provides this just like boundless space, assuming you have the technology to make use of it. But then of course I did some more research and realized that even that is questionable. You know, once you get into things like anoxic events, I won't get into the science. And I also, full disclosure, I am still suffering from a really unpleasant concussion. So I would just ask your listeners to just pretend that I'm being incredibly coherent and intelligent sounding, because that probably isn't the case. But no, I just said I find the ocean ecology equally fascinating, and we tend to focus on terrestrial events because we are terrestrial mammals, but what's happening to the oceans is equally, if not more, devastating.
Again, I want to remind listeners that we're talking about Bev Prescott's 2 Degrees and Anna Burke's Compass Rose, and these novels are very different, but they are equally good. Michelle, what did you think of the settings?
Well, Bev, I do have to say, I think that the fact that you used familiar places and projected what could happen to them is very, very impactful, or at least it was on me, you know, when I read it. I do believe, though, as you said, that you did put hope into the book with some of the different characters, but that did definitely have an impact on me. And Anna, I really kind of loved an entirely water-filled world, because I'm a water person and I would love living on a boat. But I actually wrote down or made a note of that there's a point where Rose kind of takes, I think it's maybe when they go on one of the islands to do some bargaining or, you know, trading, and she has a thought about like her ancestors. And she says that they were taken away from the one thing they had taken for granted, solid ground. And that line really, really struck me, of how we do take so many things for granted.
Absolutely.
We're going to take a short break here. Anna, Bev, please stay on the line. We have a couple of station announcements, and I have a special song, and I want everyone to listen to the lyrics. We'll talk about it afterward.
Put up a parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? It paid paradise, put up a parking lot.
We are talking to Bev Prescott about her novel 2 Degrees, Anna Burke about her novel Compass Rose. I'm here with Michelle Pond in the studio, and Linda Wilson, our sound engineer and producer. That song will celebrate 50 years next year as Joni Mitchell's Big Yellow Taxi. I was 18 when it came out, and it was played throughout the college dorms, and it is so relevant even today. She had a line in there about DDT, and I grew up in the 50s, and I still remember down on the Gulf, I was in Texas City, Texas, the DDT trucks would go by to keep the mosquitoes down, and there'd be huge clouds of DDT, and all the kids, barefoot, shorts, would run behind it, just breathing in the DDT. I was very fortunate because my father was a chemical engineer, and he would haul us in the second he saw those trucks and close the doors and the windows and keep us in an interior room. He said, "You're not going to breathe that." But what did you think of that song, Bev?
I love that song. I love the Joni Mitchell version of it, the Counting Crows version of it. And I agree with you, Elizabeth. It is so relevant today, if not even more immediately relevant.
And Anna, were you familiar, I take it, with the song?
Yes, although I'm embarrassed that I didn't know that Joni Mitchell wrote it.
That's okay. I want to talk about characters now because they're so important to both these novels. And I'm going to start with Michelle. Let's talk first about 2 Degrees. Would you mention one or two characters that really stood out for you?
Federico, I think. And Bev, you'll have to forgive me on the pronunciation. Is it Quanic?
The Conic.
Conic, okay.
The Conic, yeah.
So the Conic group, he ends up being an ally to Eve, even though she doesn't know that. Exactly when she first meets him. But just his background, you know, beautiful singer, and the group, you know, he has a code. I think they're the hopeful group, or at least one of the hopeful groups in the book. And he sort of maybe is a little bit of her conscience at times, or, you know, I mean, he's definitely an important person in guiding her on what she's going through in the course of the book.
Of course, for me, Sharon, who is making this journey, is a completely pivotal character because we suffer along with her. We see her fears. She's so brave. So definitely Sharon. Another character that I really enjoyed, well, two, because they kind of go together, are the Inuit refugee boy.
Yeah.
And also the eccentric school teacher who, I won't go into details because I don't want to ruin the novel for anyone, but she is something else. Beth, this really is an eclectic collection of characters. Do you want to talk a little bit about who maybe your favorite is?
My favorite character is Woody. And the reason is that with these characters, what I wanted to do is I absolutely meant for them to be an eclectic group of characters with very unique personalities and skill sets, and they were from all over the world. So Federico was from Ushuaia, South America, down in South America. And of course, Inu is an Inuit refugee boy. And Annie was this former school teacher from the Midwest. In the story, she's older. She's in her late 70s, early 80s. And so I wanted to have different ethnicities, different ages, different thought processes about how the world works and how they interacted with each other. And Woody was, the reason I liked Woody the most is that Woody was this brilliant scientist who, when Sharon meets Woody, Woody is praying on an Islamic prayer rug. So she has this mix of spirituality and science in her mind that drives who she is. And I wanted her to be a person who had this broad respect for this, like, science and spirituality and with the, and so she's the leader of the Conic that you mentioned. And so what I did was they have the snowflake symbol that represents them. And so you've probably heard in the news people make fun of that, you know, it's a negative comment that people make against people who might have more liberal politics. And so what I did was I took that back and I made it a symbol that expresses the 6 human virtues, professions, and needs. And so the Conic people, they built their society based on these different human characteristics and professions and virtues that I hope are the kinds of things that will help us figure out how to deal with climate change and each other so that maybe we actually might survive. So Woody was my favorite character because she was the thing, the glue that held all of that together.
You even have opera in this book. And I believe you are a bit of an opera buff, correct?
Yeah. So Federico when he was a young boy, he was this up and coming opera star. And so he gets taken to Chicago to be in the opera house. And that's how he survives what happens when the glaciers melt in the Andes and there's no water. There's a famine in South America. And so he ends up coming up to Chicago, and that's how he meets Woody, and that's his story going from there. So yes, whenever we write, I'm sure Anna would agree to this as well. We always would put these little spices in our story, but that are spices of things, from things that we really like ourselves. And so yeah, it was fun to have him in there.
I do have a bit of a quibble on behalf of your cat, Bev. There is a dog that plays a major role in this book, Eric the Red, and I don't see your cat, and I'm surprised she hasn't thrown a bit of a snit.
Well, yeah, exactly. But Eric is based on a real dog that I met named Eric the Red when we visited the Arctic. And when I met this dog, I said to myself, he has to be in the story. He's this huge, beautiful, sweet dog. And it was fitting for me, having met Eric the Red, the real Eric the Red, while on a trip visiting the Arctic, that he would end up in 2 Degrees.
Let's turn now from 2 Degrees to Compass Rose and the characters in Compass Rose. Again, back to Michelle. Who were a couple of your favorite characters?
Well, I have to say Miranda.
I think she's most lesbian readers' favorite.
Because I thought she had an interesting life, though, too, and interesting experiences that obviously molded her character and some of her actions. And you never quite know whether she's a good guy or a bad guy. Anna keeps us guessing through the whole book, really, about Miranda. And that makes it very interesting. I actually kind of liked Crow's Nest also. He was sort of like that outer...
Oh, yeah, yeah, right.
Like outer narrator who would sort of drop these bits of wisdom.
And speaking about eccentric, yes.
Yeah.
One of my favorite characters is Kraken. I did appreciate your restraint, Anna, in not using Release the Kraken too often. I'm sure it must have been terrifically tempting.
I deleted countless instances in the final letter.
And another character I really enjoyed was Harper. Compass Rose leaves the ship fairly soon, and so Harper, in the beginning, you get to know her briefly, but she has another role later on, and I really enjoyed Harper. Of course, Compass Rose, that whole discussion of her eyes, they stand out, they suggest her background, the fact that she can be in the middle of the ocean and know exactly what latitude and longitude and where she's going, that's your scientific background coming in, right, Anna?
I also have no sense of direction, so it's a little bit of science and a little bit of just people with that innate sense of direction. That's magic to me.
So wishful thinking and projection.
Mm-hmm.
I want to ask both of you, one of the things I really enjoyed about these two novels is that in some lesbian fiction, it's a women's world. You know, there just aren't male characters, or they're unlikable, or they have lesser roles. And Bev, you had the Inuit refugee boy, and Federico, and Anna, you had Kraken and Finn. What made you decide to include these really wonderful male characters? Bev?
I never thought of 2 Degrees as being a lesbian fiction per se. So I wanted to write a real story about real people, and the fact of the matter is there are men and women everywhere, and so it wasn't meant to be a lesbian fiction story or a lesbian per se fiction story. So it's about people, and so I naturally had male characters and female characters, and they didn't fit any particular, I hope at least, any stereotypical role.
Thank you. That's an answer after my own heart. Anna, what about you?
I think it wasn't necessarily a conscious decision. Kraken is my favorite character, and I just love all of his little idiosyncrasies. But yeah, I mean, these characters just kind of, they just came into my head, and then I liked them, so I left them there, which is maybe not the most literary answer, but that's how I wrote this book.
I think it's a perfectly valid answer. I really do appreciate that this is such a well-rounded cast of characters in each book. I could see each of these books being made into a film. They're exciting, thrilling journeys. And Michelle, what about you?
I think so, too. I mean, there's just a wealth of good characters, even the ones who have a minor role. You don't really feel anybody's there extraneously. You really feel that everyone has a purpose or you know, contributes something to the story. One thing I wanted to mention about Eve that I thought of when I was preparing, that she doesn't have a lot of physical presence in the book, yet she's a presence in the book the whole way through because of her effect on what Sharon does.
That one of the parts of this book that I thought, wow, that really drives home the point of climate change, is that Sharon is a target because she has an apple tree, one single apple tree. You think about a world of starvation, and that rings true, that she's carrying these apples. It's almost like the most precious gold. Your thoughts?
So I'll start with the Eve comment. So Eve, that's exactly right. Eve was never meant to be a physical presence in the story. She was the catalyst for Sharon's journey. She was what made Sharon keep putting one foot in front of the other, even though all these really difficult things were happening to her. With regard to the apple tree, starvation, people not having enough food. And so the apple tree, it was the symbol of, yes, it was gold. It was the thing that kept her and kept Sharon and Eve alive. The antagonist in the story, the Strelitzia wants that. And so there's this part towards the end, I got to be careful of spoilers, but what I was trying to do is make the point that, you know, Sharon's got this guarded thing, and is she sharing it with anyone? No, she's keeping it to herself so that she could survive. And I'm not saying whether that was the right thing or the wrong thing to do. I'm just trying to lay out there that, you know, resources are going to become so scarce. And what's going to happen when that happens? Will we share? Will we be able to share? And so the apple tree was just like Eve. The apple tree was more symbol in the story than like this physical, you know, character going through the motions of each chapter.
Anna, it's true in your book as well that there are people who are starving. And I don't want to get into the later part of the book, but in Compass Rose, supplies are at a premium and foodstuffs. And because it's a watery environment, there's just not many places to grow food. What made you make that part of the plot?
I think there's a very serious reason, and then there's more personal reason for me, which is that, if anyone keeps a garden or grows hydroponically, we know how frustrating it is when, you know, the tomato blight comes through, or for some reason you get white flies in your greenhouse, or, you know, anything that can totally decimate one crop or, you know, one grow space, it has a real personal impact, and it makes us sad, but most of us don't depend on that. You know, we can go to the grocery store and buy tomatoes, or go to the farmer's market and, you know, get some more tomatoes. So not having anywhere else to go, I mean, that is something that I do dwell on probably more than I should. I think that definitely informed my writing. And then I was thinking about on a ship, you know, if you are a self-sustaining, not organism, that's not the word, but if you rely exclusively on one crop or one grow space, I mean, there's bound to be problems, and, you know, we're already seeing that with huge monocropping. So I just sort of extrapolated on that a little bit further.
Bev mentioned her antagonist, and your antagonist, Qingxi, is absolutely terrifying. And there's this fight between the two groups, and you're not sure who's on what side, and it's all over these very, very limited foodstuffs and supplies. I think both your books, 2 Degrees and Compass Rose, show what could happen in the future if climate change is not addressed. Where did Qingxi come from, Anna?
I love her. I think she's great. So I wanted to create an antagonist that was a match for one of the other characters in the book, who is Admiral Kamita. And without spoilers, I mean, yeah, I think another concept I did enjoy playing with is just, you know, who's a good guy, who's a bad guy, or are there good guys and bad guys? And I think as the writer, you know, I choose to believe the latter, which is that, you know, people tend to be a nasty mix of gray, you know, depending on your motives and your methods and where you're standing. Anyone can be a good guy or a bad guy. And so I needed someone who could match Admiral Kamita. And then I also wanted someone with a little bit of a sense of dark humor. And she's definitely all of those. I think there's this great, terrifying historical pirate named Xinqi, and she was born a prostitute. She married a pirate, ended up taking over his fleet, and she's the most terrifying pirate in history. I mean, she's also one of the only pirates, I think, to retire peacefully with a settlement from the British Navy, the British government, unless I'm mistaken. So, you know, a real powerful female figure, the role model for lots of young girls.
Both of these books feature a powerful woman who is on a journey. And I love Bev's answer about she wasn't intending to write lesbian fiction. It's just about, you know, this world that she has created. I want to read a couple of reviews for each of your books because I think both books are just beautifully written. One is by Grady Harp. He's a top reviewer. And he says about 2 Degrees, writing of this caliber is not only impressive to read, but also important to place before the public because of all of the many topics of concern it addresses. Then Velvet Lounger, who's well known to the four of us, and she's with the Lesbian Reading Room, says about 2 Degrees, fast-paced, breathless energy, extremely well-written, and faultlessly edited. This was an exhilarating read, and I literally couldn't put it down. And turning to Compass Rose, this is Tara Scott, who is a top reviewer, and this is for the Lambda Literary Review. Anna Burke has created a real gem with Compass Rose, one that fans of sci-fi and specifically climate fiction should not miss. That this is Burke's first book is also kind of incredible because her talent is evident on every page. This is one author to watch since she's sure to delight us with more weird and wonderful stories for years to come. Victoria Thomas in the Lesbian Review says, if I was going to limit myself to one new book this year, Compass Rose would be that book. I'm hoping these accolades that you're getting, and you're both up for Golden Crown Literary Society Awards, and in fact, you're going head-to-head in one category, the science fiction fantasy category, I hope it's not going to go to your heads and you're going to turn on each other. Beth, can you answer that, please?
Never. I would never.
Anna, what
I'm
about you?
Anna, I depend way too much on Beth to ever get on her bad side.
Good to hear. Let's talk a little about what you've written in the past. And Anna, I'll start with you. I know that you've been in academics and you were, I believe, an English lit major. What have you written in the past that led or didn't lead to Compass Rose?
I think my best-known work prior to Compass Rose is Can My Dog Eat Kale? So if you've ever Googled, can my dog eat something on the internet, you know, you may have run across my work. I've been a freelance contributor for a lot of, including, you know, the American Kennel Club and quite a few vets. I am married to a vet. So Compass Rose is definitely the first full-length work of fiction that I've written, and I would not encourage readers to Google my other work, unless they have questions about what their dog can eat.
Well, I'm more concerned about the kale. I like the meme that you should cook it with oil so it can slide off the plate into the garbage. Beth, I have read one of your previous novels, Blowback, which concerns a serious topic of gun control, and I think it's a really important book. What else have you written, and do you want to talk for just a minute about Blowback?
Sure. I have two prior books, My Soldier 2 and Step Into the Wind, that came out before Blowback. As a writer, how I decide what I want to write about usually depends on what subject is it that I'm most interested in. So I write to explore, and then what I hope is that I can tell a story that will make readers want to come on that journey with me. And so typically the nugget, the kernel from which my story arises is usually some subject I'm interested in or want to explore. So with Blowback, I wanted to explore gun violence, and I wrote it in the wake of the Sandy Hook horrible shooting. And so what this story does is it follows the history of a single gun and the impacts that it has on a particular family. So in that case, Megan Blaney was my protagonist. And so her brother acquires this gun on the black market, and a series of bad things happen because they have this gun in their midst. And what I wanted to do with the story is show that the Blaneys were an average, everyday American family. They were good people trying to do the best that they can, and I put a gun in the midst of them. And so the story is about what could happen when you keep a firearm in your midst. I tried to be very neutral when I wrote the story. I was hoping that through the story people wouldn't say, oh, she's of one side or the other, until I got to the very end and I explained why I wrote Blowback. That's what that story is about.
I think that you did a very good job of being fair to both sides, having read it. Before we go to what you're writing now and what you are working on, Michelle, do you have any questions or thoughts about 2 Degrees and Compass Rose that we have not addressed?
Yes, I think the role that loyalty plays in each book is interesting and was one of the major themes that stuck out to me.
Good Anna, point.
Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yes, loyalty is one of the 6 great virtues that the Conic people, they try to cultivate within their group. And so it's a hard thing because loyalty is so important, but it can also be abused as well. And so, yeah, Sharon has, as she's going along her journey, she's understanding how loyalty is so important and how it helps us protect each other, but it could also hurt us as well.
Anna, Miranda has an interesting way of showing loyalty on her ship. It's fairly early on, so I don't think we're giving too much away. How does she make sure that her crew is loyal to her? It was kind of shocking when Rose came on board.
Oh, yeah, she's quite brutal. So she brands her sailors. I guess brand maybe isn't the best word, but she scars their palms so that if they were to jettison onto a different ship, you know, it's hard to hide your hand. So she basically ensures their loyalty through mutilation, for lack of a better word. But I think the reason that I harped on loyalty as much as I did in the book is that, you know, that loyalty isn't necessarily something that most of us think about in our day-to-day lives. You know, it's not that, I mean, it's important, but it's not important in the way that it would be if you really depend on the people around you. And I think that's why, you know, we hear about it a lot. The best example that comes to mind is the military, you know, because you really, you know, if you depend completely on the people around you to keep you safe, that's the most important thing.
Thank you, Michelle, for that. That is an important theme throughout. I want to ask what you're working on now. Anna, you have written another novel, Thorn, which I've read. I was a little worried when I saw that it was a Beauty and the Beast retelling because I thought there have been an awful lot of those. And you made it completely new and fresh and exciting. You want to talk a little about Thorn and then Nottingham?
Sure. It started off as a loose retelling of Beauty and the Beast, and I'm not even entirely sure that it is anymore. It got its roots there. I do certainly give credit where credit is due, but it's a very dark, wintry fairy tale. Again, I was exploring just the limits that we can go, just sort of across all fiction. Women don't always get to be as multifaceted as we deserve. You know, I think that everyone, regardless of your gender or gender identity, you know, you should be allowed to be, you know, good, evil, anything in between, ambitious, cruel, kind, loving. And so I really enjoy playing with these powerful female characters who it sort of keeps the reader guessing about whether or not they're good people or whether it matters necessarily at the end that they're good people.
And I'm guessing you've just described Nottingham as well.
To a certain degree, yeah. Nottingham, I ended up leaving a little more true to the original story because I wanted to change it, and then I realized that our economic and political situation really hasn't changed that much in the past 6,000 years, and that was depressing. But that's a topic for another time.
Bev, let me ask you what you're working on.
My next book is going to be called The Beekeeper, and so it's about this overworked, middle-aged lawyer who's on the cusp of achieving her greatest goal. And in the process, she collapses in the courtroom, and she decides to take some time off, so she goes up to Maine, and she ends up working with this woman who's a Guatemalan refugee, and this woman is a beekeeper, and so she teaches my protagonist, Nora, all about honeybees. And so this is a story about how this lawyer is trying to find herself. She spent decades trying to find herself, and by spending time with the bees teach her to just be herself. What I hope to do is take readers on the journey that I've been on learning about honeybees and the things that they've taught me.
Sounds good. We're running out of time.
Would you say they were beeing themselves?
These books, 2 Degrees and Compass Rose, are published by Bywater Books, and I want to thank you so much for both being on the show today.